All right, so if I could just have you each say your name and what year you were born and where you were living during the Great Depression.
Okay. I'm Robert W. Richmond. I was born on July 5th, 1924. I was born in State College, but moved to California, Upper Michigan, and then Chicago. So I was in Chicago during the Depression, having moved there about 1929.
I don't know if you want any more or not.
And so neither of you said you really suffered during this Great Depression, but looking back on it, you can see some changes, some different lifestyles. So what exactly are some examples of those effects that maybe you see now looking back?
Well, in thinking about this, one effect was I think I had a lot more liberty than children have today. My parents were so busy worrying about things that they didn't worry about me. So I was free to run around South Chicago and do pretty much what I wanted, including getting into a little mischief. But I never got into anything serious enough that a man in a blue coat took me home. Well, I was raised in South Chicago. The reason was that my mother was a stockroom clerk in the physics department at the University of Chicago. And while I didn't think much of it, again, I was a youngster, but we moved every year. Why did we move every year? Because landlords would give you a free month's rent. So they were trying to keep their rent, keep their apartment buildings filled up. Also, I remember when I was probably in first grade, maybe before that, my mother was having a difficult time, so she rented one room of our apartment out to a school teacher, and I slept on the sofa. Later on, she moved to an apartment across the Midway from the University of Chicago, rented out rooms, and I slept on the back porch, the open back porch, all winter long. And sometimes the snow would be 6 and 8 inch over me, but I was under the covers and I did just fine. Also, she had me come to the University of Chicago and sell magazines. We were looking for all sorts of money, and so I sold magazines to all the professors in the physics department at the University of Chicago, and I'm sure they felt sorry for my mother and this little boy. But I was selling magazines to the like of Dr. Compton, Michelson, all these great physicists that I didn't appreciate who they were at the time. But just so they bought a magazine from me, and what happened to the money? Turned it over to my mother.
And so you moved every year and you sold magazines to help out. Can you go into a little more detail about what your home life was like? What it was like, in the house, the tension or not, or whether it was lighthearted?
Well, there wasn't any particular tension. It was sort of level and even. It wasn't lighthearted either. I mean, it was pretty serious going, but my mother didn't complain. She always saw that I was fed. The food might not have been, steak every night. In fact, I don't remember ever having steak. And we did all sorts of things that to save money and make money. I remember my mother used to, a dinner used to be, "Come on, Robert, we're going to have cream tomatoes on toast." And she would mix some flour with some of the juice from the tomatoes and heat it up, and it would be sort of a creamy tomatoes on toast. Well, that was a cheap meal. When Barbara and I got first married, I says, "Oh, I'll make you a good meal." I made her cream tomatoes on toast, and she hasn't let me cook since. And I think the same thing. I didn't particularly object to the cream tomatoes on toast, but it was because my mother was economizing whenever she, yeah, I remember one time she got everyone in the physics department together, and because she found a farmer that would sell us chickens, and all we had to do was go out there and get the chickens. And so one Saturday she had an order for maybe 50 chickens, and out we went to the farm, and the farmer grabbed 50 chickens and chopped their heads off on a chopping block and brought the chickens home, and we ate them because the chickens were cheap.
And do you think, you know, that was normal, going to the farm and getting your own chicken and moving, you know, every year so that you'd get that free month's rent?
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with it. I thought it was an exciting experience going to the chicken farm, although I was sort of turned off after a while. But anyway, those are just the things we did to get by. Well, let me talk about my mother at some point here. That may bring up more. I don't know when you want to turn to that. Okay, my mother got a job in about 1929 in the University of Chicago. And she got that job because my father was a physicist, and she'd worked in the physics department here at Penn State as a secretary. So that's what led her to get the job. Then comes the Depression, and the University of Chicago comes along, and many employers did, and lay off women. You saved all the jobs for men, so they laid off the women. And here she got a notice that she was terminated. And, oh, she was devastated because she was a single mother. She had left my father, and what was she going to do? So she went to the head of the department, I don't know, it was Dr. Compton or someone, and told her story. And he said, yeah, we shouldn't fire you. I'll talk to the university president, and they got her termination reversed. You know, later she married a dental student that was going to Rush Dental College, which is now Northwestern. And he set up an office in the front of our apartment at 69th and Stony Island in South Chicago. And times were tough. Difficult to set up a dental practice during the Depression. And people would come in, doctor, I've got a toothache. And, okay, he would fill it, and I'll pay you later. And so they were having a very difficult struggle. Finally, they said, we got to do something. And they, as I understand it, they wrote letters to all the people that hadn't paid it, explaining that they had to live too. Da, 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 da. And most of them fessed up and paid for their dental work.
So what was like that, like having the people coming in and out of your home all the time?
It was no problem because we had a door between the front office and our living room, so we weren't kind of worried, although we did have to open that door and go down the hall to get to the bathroom. But that was, you know, we just accepted it as part of living.
And did money get better?
It didn't get better till the early 40s. And of course, I was very concerned about what was I going to do in life? How was I going to get by? Could I go to college, you know? And began to worry about that. And when I was in high school, now I was in Pittsburgh, when I was in high school, I considered all the various options, including joining the military and so forth and so on. And finally had saved enough money through birthday presents and Christmas presents and cutting grass. And in Pittsburgh in those days, it was pretty dirty, so another buddy and I could make lots of money cleaning houses every spring. We'd go in and wash the walls and clean the wallpaper, and we were doing really very good at it. Well, I made enough money that I thought, I think I can get up to Penn State and pay for one semester, not knowing how, and did a lot of things just on a chance, you know, see what happens. Came up here and stretched it into two semesters, waited tables, and finally worked my way through college. And life improved. Of course, by that time, the war had come along and things began to.
And then going back, you said at some point that a person lived with you in your house that they rented out. What was that like, having someone else live in your house with you?
It wasn't too bad. I remember when there was a school teacher in our house. She's nice. I like this. I was in first or second grade. I think she must have been an elementary school teacher. That was fine. It only lasted a short period of time. And next year it was somewhere else and something else. When we had an apartment across from the University of Chicago, and my mother had several roomers, they just came in and went to their room. We didn't have anything to do with them in particular. I do remember that we had a telephone. The telephone was a payphone in the hall. Put a nickel in and made a telephone call. And that controlled, you know, making telephone calls. You didn't make telephone calls. Long distance was a big deal, not like today, when it practically cost nothing to call anywhere in the United States. But, you know, that was just normal life, no problem. Oh, I do remember one thing, that people helped each other a lot. My stepfather's dental office caught on fire one summer and burned out. And, of course, he was devastated. His x-ray machine got burned up. And, you know, a lot of his equipment. And he repainted most of it, but this x-ray machine was, you know, kind of difficult to handle. So the instrument men at the University of Chicago came and got the x-ray machine and refurbished it and delivered it back to him. And that was the kind of help you would get.
And I mean, people helping each other, I mean, you don't see that as much today. You don't see a lot of cooperation among people, kind of keep to themselves. I mean, do you think that helped you guys to survive and overcome the Great Depression?
I think so. What I remember about telephones, though, is rather interesting. When we first moved to Pennsylvania, we didn't have a telephone. And, of course, my stepfather worked for the power company, and there was a telephone there. And then when he got a job on the railroad, they had what they called call boys, and they would come to the house, even if it was the middle of the night, and knock on the door and told him that the train was coming in, that he should go down to work. That's how he got on the trains. It wasn't a regular job; he just went when the train came in, and so. But then when they, in about 19. Probably 42 or 43, when the war was probably at its height, or maybe winding down. Then they moved to a bigger town, to Mercer, and to an apartment. And then because he had a job in the railroad, he got a telephone. He had priority to get a telephone. So that was the first telephone we had for about 8 or 9 years.
And so, looking at the Depression today, and seeing how your mother survived and your stepfather worked really hard to, you know, give you this nice life. I mean, do you have any advice, or do you see anything about this Depression that maybe, you know, to reflect on?
This is nothing like this is not a depression. I mean, because everybody has, at least everybody I know, I suppose there are people that are worse off, that don't have jobs and don't have any benefits or anything like that. But as far as I can see, particularly at State College, I don't see any signs of a major depression yet.
Well,
it's hard to say.
I'm afraid we're getting to it with all these layoffs going on and people without jobs. They're going to have to cut back, and there's going to come a time when they're going to say, do I need cable television? Do I need a cell phone as well as a landline phone? And they're going to, you know, cut back. Do we need two cars? We didn't even have a car in Chicago for a long time. And as a matter of fact, we didn't get a car until we were in our late 20s. Two cars, and that was something, you know, unheard of back in those days. But that's fine. We got along. It was okay. As children, we didn't realize what was going on. I vaguely remember something about a bank holiday, but what about it? I didn't know. You did a lot of free things. I mean, while the movies were 10 and 15 cents, I didn't go that often because 10 cents is nothing today, but then it was, you thought about it a little bit. And oh, I also remember my mother later on made me work and buy my own clothes because she wanted to teach me, so-called, she said she wanted to teach me not to be spend too much and to learn to save. I think a part of that was to help her not to have to just save on something.
And do you think living through tough times has influenced the way you guys live today?
Well, I think so. We're pretty careful with our money. And she says I'm tight, and the kids are absolutely positive I'm a tight one. But on the other hand, I think we're fixed to weather this this economic storm that's coming. But we'll just have to wait and see. Today's children and our children have a lot more than we had, and I don't begrudge them that one bit. You know, I gave each of my children cars when they turned 16. Oh.
little Volkswagens.
Well, they were little Volkswagens, but they gave them transportation. And, you know, we give them the old one and we buy a new one. But today in college, you darn near need a car to get around. We could walk anywhere at Penn State and... it was a lot of walking, but we did it. And our children went to the University of Maryland, and they needed cars to get around, and they had many more opportunities. Remember, one summer my son worked for the gas company, and they kept him and paid for the rest of his college. That's the kind of opportunity that wasn't available when I was there, and that was, you know... Things were better and are better. The kids are, you know, my kids have landline phones. They've got cell phones. They've got, you know, Comcast TV and, you know, much more than, and so that, all that sort of upsets us. But that's fine. I think that's great. I just hope their children can have a better life than they have.
All right. If that's it. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.